So let's read in Mark chapter 1 and Luke chapter 4. Mark chapter 1, verse 21, starting in verse 21, and Luke chapter 4 starts in verse 31, it looks like, if I wrote down the proper numbers. You can't bet on that, but sometimes I do. This is the fourth in the list of the miracles of Jesus. A man in a synagogue delivered from a demon. This is the way it reads in the book of Mark. And they went into Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And they were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one who had authority and not as the scribes. And immediately there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying out with a loud voice, came out of him, and they were all amazed, so that they questioned among themselves, saying, "What is this, a new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." And at once his fame spread everywhere throughout all the surrounding region of Galilee. See, this is seems to be the first of the miracles we've read about, anyway, that was done in public. I have to call somebody who knows how to handle the plumbing, I suppose. Changing water into wine was, people didn't know, you know about the water?
I'm gonna go check it out.
Oh, okay. Oh, you can climb up and look at it?
Yeah.
Oh, good luck. Don't fall in. Changing the water into wine was done kind of back in the back of the house, I presume, and the people really didn't know where this water, now become wine, came from. Then he healed an official's son, where the official said, "Come down to my house and heal my son," but his house was 25 miles away. Jesus said, "Go, your son will live." And he didn't really find out that his son was better until the next day. Then the third miracle we looked at was a catch of fish, which happened, you know, some distance out in the water. And the people who saw it were Peter and, I'm guessing, Andrew and whoever else was in the boat with him. And whoever else they called out on the second boat was told about it, or they saw the fish as well. But this one occurs in a synagogue in Capernaum. If you read the same event in Luke, "And he went down to Capernaum, a city of Galilee, and was teaching them on the Sabbath. And they were astonished at his teaching, for his word possessed authority. And in the synagogue there was a man who had the spirit of an unclean demon, and he cried out with a loud voice, 'Ha, what have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God.' But Jesus rebuked him, saying, 'Be silent and come out of him.' And when the demon had thrown him down in their midst, he came out of him, having done him no harm. And they were all amazed, and said to one another, 'What is this word? For with authority and power he commands the unclean spirits, and they come out.' And reports about him went out into every place in the surrounding region." So in Capernaum, this town on the Sea of Galilee, it's my understanding this is pretty much the center of Jesus' activity for some number of months at this point. Apparently, it's the home of Peter, Andrew, James, and John. It's where their fishing boats are. And speaking of their home, we'll actually be in Peter's house in the next miracle. And Jesus was teaching in the synagogue. Last week we read he was teaching out in the open air out by the Sea of Galilee and sat in the back of a boat while he taught the crowds who were seated on the sea, on the shore. Now he's in the synagogue on the Sabbath. I don't know what their customs were, but apparently Jesus could openly and freely teach in a synagogue. I don't know if this was a regularly scheduled meeting for the locals, or if he somehow was able to have special teaching sessions or whatever. But it's a Sabbath, and he's in the synagogue. And everyone was astonished at his teaching, because he taught with authority. He either taught in an authoritative manner, but not only that, I think he was teaching things in authoritative things. He was he taught as one who was to be obeyed. And this was astonishing, it says. Does it say astonished? They were astonished at his teaching. They were astonished at his teaching in both Mark and in Luke, because of the authority that he taught with and expressed. And there was a man with an unclean spirit, or the spirit of an unclean demon. Oh, Dale knows how to handle that. Maybe I should go learn. We'll have a chance to talk about about demons in a couple of minutes, but apparently it appears from reading Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it appears there are spiritual beings without bodies that can somehow take control of a person, and in this case, make the person shout things. Shouting, in this case, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." If you watch the movies about the demon possessions, they're always kind of growling and saying blasphemous things. But here's one who recognizes who Jesus is and is confronting Jesus, but he's certainly not saying bad things about him, and he may be annoying or irritating to Jesus, but he's not blasphemous. He seems to be relatively polite. Might be loud, but still relatively polite. And he says, "What have you to do with us?" Now, who is he speaking for when he says us? Is he speaking on behalf of other demons? I don't know. I presume that that's the case. He's expecting some kind of confrontation with Jesus, and expecting that Jesus may have come to destroy us, them. But Jesus simply says, "Be quiet," or "Be silent," and "Come out of him." That's what he says in both Mark and in Luke. And there's a bit of a commotion. Mark says the spirit was convulsing him, and Luke says it threw him down. So apparently the guy fell to the floor, rolled around a bit, and the spirit came out of him, and apparently he was okay after that. It did him no harm, it says in Luke. Jesus didn't have any kind of long preparation. There was no long ceremonies. He didn't have to invoke a lot of words. He just simply said, "Be quiet, come out of him." 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 words. And the spirit left the man, but where did he go? I don't know where the spirit goes, this unclean spirit. I just know that he left this guy, and everybody was amazed. and said, a new teaching with authority, he commands even the unclean spirits and they obey him. For with authority and power, he commands the unclean spirits and they come out of him. And this is the sign that he is performing now with this man who has the who is possessed by the unclean spirit. And the significance, it seems, is pretty easy to see. It starts the paragraph with the people in the synagogue amazed and astonished at the teaching of Jesus, and it ends the paragraph with them being amazed and astonished at the authority he commands with his words, with his teaching, and with what he says over the unclean spirits. So the significance I'm taking from this is Jesus is the one to be obeyed, and we know that because he even commands the unclean spirits. So that's the significance I see in this miracle. Now, let's see how many people I can make mad at me as we talk about demon possession. This is a curious subject. Some people say, well, they're just, the ancients were kind of superstitious and they saw demons under every rock, so this is something they just described. It was really something else happening. The guy was, he was mentally ill, crazy, under the influence of mushrooms or something, we don't know. Well, that kind of approach doesn't take the words of Jesus seriously. Jesus spoke to this to the spirit himself. He addressed the unclean spirit that was taking control of this man. My observations, and you can correct me, and I feel please do. If you read Matthew, Mark, and Luke, demon possession is pretty common. It's pretty much an everyday thing. Jesus runs into somebody possessed with a demon everywhere he goes, at least pretty commonly. And what's more, it's the writers expect us to know what they're talking about. You know, they don't explain what blindness and deafness and being crippled are because they expect we know what that means. They also expect us to know what it means to be possessed with an unclean spirit. So that's really not very helpful because it doesn't really explain much. It just states the facts about it. You know, if you were looking to the Bible to understand something about being blind or being deaf, you really wouldn't get much help either. People are reported being blind and deaf, but you don't get much medical information from that. And same thing with being possessed by a demon. It's a condition that was so common that they presume everybody knows exactly what they're talking about. Now, this is, if you read the Old Testament, I'm not aware of any place in the Old Testament where it says anyone was possessed with an unclean spirit. There's a couple of places that get kind of close. King Saul, the Spirit of God left King Saul, and it says the Lord sent him a harmful spirit. I think that's something else. I think this is a judgment from God. I don't think that that's some kind of spirit of an unclean demon. And then there are other cases where prophets are said to have a lying spirit. This, I think, is another judgment from God on a nation that's not obeying him anyway. He sends prophets to mislead them in one way or another. So that occurs in the Old Testament, but I'm not familiar of any instance in the Old Testament where someone is said to be possessed by an unclean spirit. I stand to be corrected if you can find it, but I don't think it's there. I might be wrong. And then suddenly, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it's everywhere and commonly spoke of. Funny enough, though, when you get to the book of John, John talks about demons, and Jesus is accused of having a demon, but he doesn't cast any demons out of anybody in John. It's not that it doesn't happen, it's just not something that John records. We looked at the signs that were listed in John, and casting out demons was not among them. You read the book of Acts, and in Acts chapter 5, speaking of signs and wonders done by the apostles, casting out those afflicted with unclean spirits is one of the things that they did. In Acts chapter 8, Philip goes down to the city of Samaria, and he says he cast out, cast out people with unclean spirits there. In Acts chapter 16, there's a slave girl who follows Paul around and says, these men are servants of the Most High God, until Paul gets kind of tired of it, and he casts that spirit out of the slave girl, and he ends up in jail for his trouble. And in Acts chapter 19, I think Paul is in Ephesus, it mentions evil spirits coming out of people. And also during that time, there were some people who were trying to cast out evil spirits in the name of Jesus, who Paul preaches, and it didn't work so well for them. And there's kind of a humorous episode where the spirit beats up a few of them, and those are in the book of Acts. The only instances of evil spirits or unclean spirits that I'm aware of. You read through the letters from Romans to Jude. There's no clear indication of people possessed by demons in the letters. Now, there are some references to demons, but not people being possessed by demons. There are no instructions for Christians to cast out demons in any of the letters either. If you find me wrong, I'm happy to listen to it. So that's kind of a mixed thing. It doesn't seem to be anything at all in the Old Testament. Now, some people see a couple of instances, but I'm not sure that I agree with those. It's all over the place in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's not a big deal in John. It's not mentioned in John. There's a few instances in Acts, but there's definitely some unclean spirits there. And you get to the letters, and it doesn't seem to be a concern. You read the book of Revelation, there are some references to demons and unclean spirits. And in the vision that John sees, those symbols, some of them can be interpreted as people possessed by spirits. So what do we make of all that? Yes, you have something good. Yeah, that's one. So, like Patty's saying that the note in her Bible says that during Jesus' ministry, these demons were allowed by God to wander about, so Jesus could clean them up. Is that more or less that? So he could demonstrate, yeah, and which is what happens in the miracle we read about. He exhibits his authority over the demon. He just talks to it, and it has to go. With a word, and people are astounded by this because apparently that didn't happen routinely. Not everybody could just speak and the demon would leave. So, other things, from what you can read everything you can about unclean spirits and demons in the Bible, and you still have some very basic questions that are not answered, like who are they and where do they come from? You think you know where the demons come from? You may have heard a story about, you may have heard something about it, but I'm not aware of any place in the Bible where it explicitly tells us who they are and where they come from. Now, so we can, you know, it's people say, well, they must have been the angels who sinned, as spoken of in 2 Peter and maybe Jude. Well, that's a good guess, and it may be right, but the Bible doesn't say explicitly that they are. Bible doesn't say where Satan comes from either. You may have heard a story about where Satan comes from, a very elaborate story, but the Bible's that's an interpretation of two or three passages. And some people get really mad if you try to tell them that maybe Satan didn't come from where they think. You know, Satan was some kind of archangel, and there was a big war in heaven, and then he was cast down, and some kind of elaborate story. And, well, maybe it happened that way. Bible doesn't explicitly say so. You can interpret several passages and piece that story together, and it might be right. You might be right. Maybe not, though. I don't know. How does this possession occur? As far as I can tell, the cases we read of in the Bible, like this guy in the synagogue, you know, there's just a guy there, and he shows up like this. There's no explanation of why it happened. Did the guy himself do something that brought it on, or is it kind of a random thing that can't be controlled? You can't stop, you can't start, you can't do anything about. I don't know. Why do people become possessed? Well, I don't know. I don't know if the Bible tells us. Can you avoid being possessed? Well, maybe. How do you cast out a demon? Well, you know, we can read what Jesus did, but he didn't always do exactly the same thing, maybe. But we don't have any instructions on how we should do it that I'm aware of. I guess we could try to do what we see the apostles doing, but it doesn't really say much about what they did either. Do you have to have some kind of divine power to cast out a demon? Well, it was an illustration of the power of Jesus and the authority and his authority. Would somebody else have to have similar kind of authority? So there's a lot of questions. And there's a lot of people today who have a whole lot to say about demons, but they can't get very much of it from the Bible. There's still a lot of people who say a lot of things about it. Now, my experience, I have never met anyone who I would say was possessed by an unclean spirit. I don't get out much. I have a pretty sheltered life. You probably know three people right now, and you suspect a couple of more that are, but not me. I don't know any person that I've ever met that I would say was possessed. I wouldn't know what to look for. There's some mean people out there. Yeah, there are some mean people. I may have come across a few wacky people, crazy people, with some serious physical problems in their head. Okay.
So in Revelation 12, when it's talking about Satan being thrown down to the earth, you don't think that he was a fallen angel in that particular?
Well, we see John having a vision of Satan being thrown down to the earth, but is that a historical fact, or is that something that's playing out in the vision that John is seeing? And I have no idea what Revelation chapter 12 says, so I'm just arguing with you for the sake of arguing. To which, this is the kind of argument that my wife would say, well, you always have to be disagreeable, don't you? Yeah.
See, that's the story that's told, though, about the war with Michael and his angels fighting the dragon.
Yeah, well, you can, and maybe, and that's, but is that where he came from? Is that his origin? So apparently he has angels, and they end up in the lake of fire at the end of the book. I read that part.
Just a thought.
But But was Satan at one time an angel of equal approval and glory as Michael and Gabriel and the other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle angels, Raphael and Leonardo? No, that's different people. Again, that might be exactly right. The story you hear might be exactly right, but you know, it's pieced together from here and there, and maybe it's not right. I don't know. I don't know that it makes a difference one way or the other. But so there are people who will confidently say that demon possession was something that God allowed in the first century when there were people around who knew, who could handle it, Jesus and his apostles, and they were all kind of mopped up and put away in a safe place, and we don't have to worry about it. There are other people who will just as confidently say that that you are deceived if you think such a thing. Satan is out there possessing people today, and it's our job to go find them and deliver them from this horrible condition. And sure enough, they find a lot of people who they need to deliver from this horrible condition. I don't find anybody because mostly I'm not looking for them. And if I were to find them, I wouldn't know what to do with them. The people who are looking for them seem to find plenty of them. So what do you make of that? Well, who knows what? Yeah. You can't believe anything you see on TV.
The other day on Facebook, a man from LaForce, a little town we came from, he had an article in there and he said something about, well, it was five or six really bad words in it. But anyway, he was running the people of LaForce down, said they were busybodies and always messing in other people's affairs and blah, blah, blah. So I just commented to him and I said, it sounds like I don't appreciate the kind of language you use on Facebook, and I think you need Jesus in your life. Well, he commented back to me and told me that I was judging him, and I said,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, people nowadays they get on Facebook and they just put some terrible words.
Yeah, it's
in there, you know.
They get awfully brave when they're behind their keyboard and
several other people commented to him. They weren't quite as strong as I was, but they commented to him, so maybe he had other people to look at rather than me.
Maybe you're too far away. Yes.
There's no doubt about it that evil doesn't exist.
Yeah, evil.
There's no doubt that evil doesn't exist.
Okay. No. Okay. It does. Yes. Evil. Yes. Sin and evil certainly exist. And there are some people who are quite evil. Who knows the source?
Christ.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So, you don't know. But that's why we turn to Scripture and God. And,
yeah.
And use prayer to deliver us from
evil. Evil people or evil actions. Yeah. But but people can do a lot of evil without being controlled by the spirit of an unclean demon.
Correct.
One of the teachers I follow, a man named Jack Cottrell. He's in his 80s, retired. Written several books. I've read. No, not very closely, but I've read kind of most everything I can get my hands on that he's written. When I read what he teaches, I think to myself, you know, I think that's what my father and my grandfather would have said. Now, if you knew my father and my grandfather, that might mean something to you. I say this to say that he's a pretty conservative kind of guy. And he says, this is what he says about the topic of demon possession. He was of the position that it was a first century occurrence, and when Jesus and his apostles were there to exercise their authority over the demons, they were allowed to do so. It's not something we should be concerned about terribly today. But then he said he changed his mind, and he changed his mind because he heard too many people, he heard too much evidence about their present-day activities. Now, he himself, it doesn't sound like, had the experience with the demons. Is that he knew people who said that they had experience with the demons, and he's read a couple of good books on the topic as well, and he's convinced from that. So to me, that's more than hearsay. I'm hearing double-hand hearsay about it. So, again, my experience, I've never met anybody who I thought was possessed by a demon. It's kind of rash to say, well, it can't possibly happen. I wouldn't say that. But I wouldn't say that it's happening all the time either. The people who claim to deal with it all the time, they're into a lot of crazy stuff. Most of them are on TV, I guess.
That's like ghosts. I had my kids at school asking me if I believe in ghosts, and I said, no. Why not? I've never seen one. Until I see one, I won't believe in ghosts.
So I understand that that Steve and Sherry live in a haunted house, by the way.
I wasn't going to bring that up.
Yeah, they're quite certain that I've heard stories about their haunted house. I also heard stories that the ghosts are quite pleasant and not really a trouble. They're just hanging around.
Well, Lori, she picks up their mail and paper and takes it in. She turns on different lights and she sees the house, and she says, "Oh, that's the people passing by. I think there's someone home." She has gone back, and the light she turned on is off. The light was off and it's turned on one way or the other. So
I had a little basket sitting on the table yesterday, and I hear this noise and I turn around and it's on the floor.
See? But you know, they're not doing any real damage, are they? They're knocking over the yarn basket and stuff like that, yeah, so. I think they've just got mischievous kids, is what they've got. Yeah, yes.
What would you say to the Native American Indian tribes that still worship spirits? Not a tribe today that doesn't have a medicine man.
Yeah, that's true. It's a I would encourage them not to worship the spirits. I think some of our brothers are in the Navajo tribe, aren't they? Up at Gallup. They've been here. I understand the president, was it the president of the Navajo tribe worshipped with our brothers up at Gallup? Am I thinking of that right? All right, well, you know, it's temporary. I mean, it's not like being chief. I'd encourage them not to, and I don't think that the spirits they worship are that's not the true God. Ah, Gallup, here we go. Yeah. Yeah. The whole buffalo. Well, I don't know that nobody here has claimed to know three people with demons right now. I don't know what you would do for them or with them anyway. But so, thank you very much for your comments. We got through one miracle. Maybe we'll do the next one next week.